and counting from 2 p.m., we are now 48 days, 9 hours, and 25 minutes away from Y2K, year 2000. The FBI has what is called Project Megiddo, and they have recently sent out a 15-page, single-space, typewritten, small print warning to all of the law enforcement agencies all over the United States, federal, state, and local. Here is that warning, called Project Megiddo, named after, as you might suspect, Megiddo, which is mentioned in the Bible, Har Megiddo, which means the hill of Megiddo, not armed Mageddon, as some mistakenly think, which, of course, is the scene of the great apocalyptic battle called the Battle of Armageddon, mistakenly. It's never called that in the Bible. It's the battle of the great day of God Almighty between the great powers of the East and the beast power and the last great climactic battle before the second coming of Christ. This is quite interesting. I've read every bit of it. I've underlined a lot of it. I won't begin to go through it all with you today, but merely to say that this summary is that many extremist individuals are plotting every kind of action against the federal government, against law enforcement agencies, against individuals. There are dozens of them. Some of them are political in nature. Some of them are militia members. Some of them are racists and white supremacists. Some are black supremacists. Some are the Jewish extremists, and some are Arab extremists. Maybe we will find out what happened to that Egypt Air aircraft that went down. I hope they do find the voice recorder, because I have my own suspicions, but that's for another time. I know that Y2K is not significant at all from a biblical standpoint. And I just tell you unequivocally that year 2000, January 1st, at midnight, has no biblical significance whatsoever. It is not mentioned in prophecy. What Dionysius the Little did in assigning the years and even the usher's chronology is mistaken anyway. And according to all the best scholarship, Jesus Christ was not born. There is no year zero. He was not born at year one, but 4 B.C. And the calendar that we have, which is a Roman calendar, is not accurate. And in the first place, if you borrowed $20 from someone and he's paying you back, 1, 2, 3, and finally gets to 18, 19, and stops, you'd say, wait a minute, you still owe me a dollar, wouldn't you? Actually, this next year, 2000, is the last year of the millennium and not the first year of the next. But don't worry about it. It doesn't matter what the truth is. The world is determined, bound and determined, that this is the beginning of the next millennium, and they are going to have an absolute orgy. They're going to have a giant bash. You know about the huge dome over at Greenwich Meridian, do you? I've talked about that, shown you a picture of it in the newsletter some time ago, back early in 1999, I believe it was. It is so gargantuan that there is, and it's a great outpouring of testimony to man's prowess and to man's ingenuity and inventiveness and genius and to man's educational institutions and, of course, to evolution. And seated in the middle of it, like the thinking person, is a gargantuan human statue. It is so big that in its seated position, underneath the roof of the dome, which straddles the Greenwich Meridian, where Greenwich Mean Time is counted from, is this big hollow statue whose head is taller than the Statue of Liberty. It is almost complete. It is going to be contributed to by nations all over the world about all the great progress that all the nations have made. You will go up in an elevator to the head and look through the eyes out of this vast arena. Then you can be taken down to walk through the leg, and you will go along and see all sorts of evolutionary displays and about how man has progressed. And there will be things about education and transportation, communication, medicine, transplant of organs, frozen sperm banks, people being buried in space. You can believe that anything and everything that science has ever envisioned, that man is so great, man is so wonderful apart from God, is going to be there. There's going to be a giant celebration at the very instant where the master clock of all of mankind, not the U.S. Naval Institute in Washington, D.C., but at Greenwich Meridian, ticks off at that second, the beginning of 2000. No doubt they will show it to you on television, if your television set is still working at that time. I'm kidding, but I'll come back to that a little bit later on. Now, Y2K not only has no biblical significance whatsoever, but it also has no chronological significance. It is not the end of anything, it's not the beginning of anything. I can't believe when I stopped to think about it that only about 6 days, 7 days ago, I was at about 10,500 feet walking around with my red on and climbing on a horse up in Colorado, but suddenly a brother-in-law died and I had to rush back and cancel my elk hunt. But let me tell you what's going to happen up above the Wiminucci River, up above Pagosa Springs in Colorado at about 10,000 feet at Y2K. Absolutely nothing. Nothing's going to happen. You know, if you come to Texas, you will see a little sign. It'll say historical monument ahead. And there's a golf course down in the hill country. And over in front of one of the mansions on one of the fairways is one of these marble monuments with a statue there with a kind of a plaque that looks like the state of Texas. And it's a replica of these monuments that you find all along the roads in Texas about some historical event that occurred there. And you go over out of curiosity in your golf cart and you look at it and it says, on like November 27th in 1804, on this spot, absolutely nothing happened. I like the humor of the family that put that up. Because actually, so far as anything other than what man does involving power, utilities like electricity and water, and computer chips in various computer-run businesses and organizations, and in things like communications, transportation, finance, and banking, government agencies, the military, state and local government, small business, whatever, even your own private PC, if it does have an embedded computer chip, which only has the two digits, which is going to come up 00 and make the computer think it's the beginning of the 19th century, then there isn't going to be any problem. My take on it, I've researched it now for the better part of a year and a half, and there are more than a million pages of information on it available in the World Wide Web, is that yes, there are going to be some dislocations and some disruptions here and there. Probably nothing more severe than like a severe winter storm, which will brown out or black out certain portions of the country here and there. Probably be fairly spotty. I doubt that it will be nationwide or even necessarily statewide. There will be some problems in small business because many small businesses have computer-related bookkeeping and, of course, all of their accounts receivable and the monies that they take in, unless they back it up, and they can do that on either a zip or a little floppy, and they can print it out if they want. That'd be wise for anybody to do that, and if they got a problem, just fix it. They advertise continually. You can just get the software. You can even download it and fix your computer, so it's no big problem for most places. But the government has been forced to admit that some of the small business people and some of the school systems are lagging behind, and there may be some schools shut down for a few days, but so what? The kids will love it, and it happens in the winter anyway. But the point is that mostly what we can expect are dislocations as a result of public hysteria. And that hysteria is probably going to mount as we get closer to December 31st at midnight. For example, right now, Jerusalem is jam-packed. There is not a single bed available in Jerusalem. People are driving all the way from Tel Aviv and other places where they can find a place to stay. Unfortunately, many people have bought a one-way ticket to Israel, and they've gone to Jerusalem. Now, you heard about the bunch of idiots from Denver who decided they were going to precipitate Armageddon and the end of the world. They took off, disappeared, went to Mexico, and by devious routes ended up in Jerusalem. Well, the Israeli authorities ferreted them out, discovered that they were going to try to precipitate some violent confrontation. Can you believe someone who believes in the Bible and believes in Jesus Christ, who said, turn the other cheek, I say unto you, love even your enemies, do good to them that hate you and despite you, and persecute you, and so on. Pray for your enemies. That anyone using the Bible and the Word of God can actually advocate violence? But they do it, don't they? Most wars are started by religious idiots. And an awful lot of people of great religious fantasies and ideas are people who can become extremely violent. I mean, witness the terrorists, not only in this country, such as McVeigh and Nichols, who perpetrated that hideous bombing in Oklahoma City, but also some of the Arabs and other people, like the Twin Trade Towers bombing, and some of the other terrorist activities that have actually been traced to some of the members of Hamas or Black September or bin Laden or some of the other Middle Eastern groups. So the real significance is not even essentially technological, but I think human. And this Project Megiddo deals with that, and it labels a lot of different groups. First of all, Christian identity. I believe that the original 13 colonies, not the melting pot that we are today, where eventually now by another 1 or 2 years, actually Los Angeles is going to have a Chicano majority and a white minority. So I'm not saying the United States as the current melting pot is Manasseh, but I believe that the original colonies, and for a certain period of time, even during the potato famine, and some of the people who were in, I think, holding areas in Europe and came here, might be descendants of a part of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. That has nothing to do with anything involving action on your part or mine. I think that is probably right. I really believe it is true. I've researched it. I've proved it to my own satisfaction. I've written a book called Europe and America in Prophecy. The things that have been prophesied, the loss of sea gates, look what's happening now in Panama. I have an article coming along in the newspaper about the Chinese organization that has an open-ended lease and they can actually sublet it to other agencies from any country they choose all the way to Iran to control both ends of the Panama Canal. And we're walking out of there as a result of Jimmy Carter's Baptist goodwill toward all nations to prove what good Christians we are, even though we had our own in perpetuity or open-ended lease for the Panama Canal. And of course, we dug the big ditch under the days of Teddy Roosevelt. And the American engineers that went down there and did that are just awesome when you look into some of the documentaries about it to this day, about Toon Locks and all the rest. So we're giving it away. Well, that's the last one of the sea gates. And little by little by little, Britain, of course, back during the days when that one picture was taken, for example, there was the British Empire. And they boasted the sun never sets on the British Empire. You could look at a map during that day, and even prior to World War II, where the Reds were not communism, but Britain, and the Pinks were British-dominated colonies in areas where, like the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan, for example, prior to World War II. And little by little, in the days of the dismantlement of colonialism, all of that disintegrated and disappeared, so the Straits of Malacca, and eventually Hong Kong, you saw Prince Charles over there and the British flag coming down and the Chinese flag going up and the Chinese soldiers with their rigid bayonets fixed coming in, long caravans of the troops coming in to take over the Suez Canal. Of course, modern day transportation and IRBMs and ICBMs have rendered some of the old sea gates virtually obsolete, but in one standpoint, when you look at about 80 to 90% of the actual logistical support for America's troops and the 9,000-mile difference between going around the Horn and going through the canal, at least two of America's admirals have spoken out very harshly against the idea of giving back the canal to the Panamanians, who in turn are allowing the Chinese to control the ports at both ends. So you can read about that. But my point is that back during those days, armed with the knowledge of who Britain and the United States are in biblical prophecy, I predicted the dismantlement of the British Empire, the loss one after another of all those sea gates, the reunification of Germany, the emergence from behind the Iron Curtain of every one of the Eastern European countries, save Russia herself, named them before crowds numbering up to 15,000. Year after year after year, I propounded that truth. It has come to pass. It took a lot longer than I thought it would. I confess that I thought some of these things would begin to happen in the mid-1960s. I thought it might all be over by the early 1970s, but by 1965, I began to change my mind. And in 1966, when I went to Petra, and that blew that theory right out of the water for me, I came back to England and I began to attack the idea that anybody is going to go off to Petra and hide in a cave. Got me in an awful lot of trouble. I won't, you know, go into that now. But the fact is that I said those things and nobody else was saying it. When Germany was reunited, I had one member of the media, after having been heard between 20 and 30 million Americans every single week on 360 radio stations and 165 television stations, saying that Europe would unite and that Germany would reunite and become the leading industrial, economic, and eventual military power inside of Europe. What has happened, folks? What has taken place? Who is the big power in Central Europe? Has Germany reunited? Is it leading Europe? Is Europe uniting? Is the United States in decline? Is our military far less able to deal with a far greater workload with far fewer people and budget hamstring under the Clinton administration? The biblical prophecies say that the trumpet will sound and none shall go to war, talking about our peoples. So, no, we never got wild-eyed about the so-called identity movement, and I'm not to even be remotely identified or associated with them, because I think there are people who take this identity movement to a ridiculous extreme to claim that they are white supremacists and that they are the great Aryan race. And there are all these weird ideas about Eve having sex with the devil. Some people in our society think that black people, and I guess some of them even think that Jewish people, are the devil's seed. And they take what Christ said to the Pharisees, "You are of your father the devil," which he is speaking metaphorically and spiritually and not genetically, and they take it to mean genetic origins and carry that to an extreme and preach hate. Well, we have a record written for over, 40, 50 years that does not mean us, and we can't be painted with that broad brush of white supremacist movements. But I'll tell you, my hair kind of stood up in the back of my neck when I read through all of this document, Project Megiddo, warning all the law enforcement agencies of who are the people who are most likely going to precipitate violent acts against American law enforcement or against government installations at the very moment where they think that the police will be less able to respond. Now, I've already talked about that in my television program, but if you would imagine that maybe the particular 911 where you are isn't functioning, and maybe the police radios and communication aren't functioning, and maybe the bank alarm system isn't functioning. And this is what the FBI report and what law enforcement is beginning to deal with all over the country to gear up for, to prepare. I will guarantee you this. I don't think there's going to be a regular law enforcement agent from the FBI down to the local constable in any little town or country or city, in the United States who will be in bed sound asleep as the clock ticks over and January 1st, at midnight is here. I think they will all be on the job. I think security personnel at major installations will be alert. And if they're not, they're crazy. Because crooks, even if they are muggers, robbers, arsonists, people who simply want to rob a bank, are going to probably be out and about at about that time, because they're going to think that all these communication vehicles are going to collapse and it'll be an opportunity for them to ring a blackout and nobody can dial 911 to get help. And they're going to run out and try to do some kind of a violent act. So we are living in a time where, in a very short period of time now, 48 days and a few hours, whatever is going to happen, whatever human beings are going to precipitate, whatever blackouts or whatever breakdown in our very elaborate and sometimes vulnerable interdependent technology doesn't work for us all of a sudden, it's going to be passed. And then it'll be January 2nd, and then it'll be February 3rd, and then it'll be March 14th, and it'll be May and June, and the world's going to keep turning, and all will eventually be sorted out. I predicted quite a while back that there probably will be some cults who are going to do like those idiots out in San Diego who put plastic over their faces and took along their car keys and their driver's license to show to the mothership behind Kahootech that when they get there, I don't know where they're going to get the cars, but they're going to go be able to drive along behind the huge comet that was seen across the skies, and I walked out and saw it so many, many times. I think there are going to be a lot of people who will probably commit suicide at that time, and that is very lamentable, very, very sad. So they identify the Christian identity movement, the white supremacy movement, various militias, the black Hebrew Israelites, the apocalyptic cults. Do you believe that this civilization, as you know it, is eventually, 2004, 2009, 2010, 2020, I don't know when, but eventually going to kind of implode and things are going to change dramatically? Do you believe in the second coming of Christ? Is that against the law to believe in the second coming of Christ? But do you believe you have to do anything to precipitate it? I don't. All I've got to do is to announce it. It's going to happen whether I lie about it and tell you it's not going to happen. I could turn around and spend the rest of the years that God gives me in whatever ministry I'm supposed to perform telling you the Bible isn't true, and it would still be true. And Christ isn't coming, and he would come anyway. So by me telling you Christ is going to take a hand and intervene in world affairs doesn't make it happen. I remember a man whose name I will not announce now. I've mentioned it several times, and I think eventually he came back to one of the various groups associated with the, you know, splinter groups that fell out from the worldwide church, who lived in Australia. And he did like a lot of people have been trying to do lately. He went over to Jerusalem, walked into the Al-Aqsa Mosque with, I think, a magazine from our organization in one pocket and a pipe bomb or something in the other pocket. Well, the Israeli authorities grabbed him and stuck him in prison for a couple, 3 years, and eventually deported him. But that kind of thing is going to take place, and you can guarantee it. And the people who are going to do it are going to be Arab extremists, Jewish extremists, black extremists, white extremists, apocalyptic cultists, and other people here or there who think they're going to precipitate Armageddon. What Timothy McVeigh and Nichols tried to do was to precipitate a series, domino effect-like, of attacks against government installations. And they picked, of course, Ruby Ridge and Waco as their catalyst or their raison d'etre for the actions that they were going to precipitate. Also, they list in this Project Megiddo the significance of Jerusalem. And then they finally have a conclusion. They say many extremist individuals and groups place significance on the next millennium, and as such, it will present challenges to law enforcement at many levels. The significance is based primarily upon either religious beliefs relating to the apocalypse. What does apocalypse mean? Most of you know, don't you? Apocalypse is merely the Greek word for revelation. And what does revelation mean? A revealing, an unveiling, an unfolding, merely revealing to your knowledge. But the media, because of movies like Apocalypse Now, have taken a few of the events out of the book of Revealing or Revelation. As it says, Christ told John that he gave unto his servants to reveal those things which must surely come to pass. And the Greek word apokalypsis merely means a revealing or an unfolding or unveiling. But because they took some of the little events that are there, they came up with a movie, Apocalypse Now, and they have had movies involving wars, and everybody thinks that apocalypse means a gigantic end-of-the-world conflagration. It does not at all. These will be based primarily upon religious beliefs relating to the apocalypse or political beliefs relating to the New World Order. And a lot of people are into conspiracy theories. They think that the United Nations is going to take over, that foreign troops are going to attack the United States. A lot of people have set January 1st, 2000, for that to happen. I've been told by people who have emailed me that there are concentration camps in Montana and New Jersey waiting for us to be ushered in behind barbed wire. There are people who think black helicopters are spying on them even now. Even now, government spies are hovering over your home. An awful lot of paranoids around. I think that the people who really do believe in God's word need to take note, because it doesn't always mean that just because someone attacks you, they're doing so because of what you believe. People can attack you merely because of your skin color. They can drag you to death, as that poor unfortunate man down there in Jasper, I think it was, Texas, which one of the most heinous crimes I've ever heard of. It just made me shudder to think of it. But thankfully, they gave both of those young guys, both of whom are white supremacists, one of whom had a book in his possession that was written by this man, who was the very same book, by the way, that was in the possession of Timothy McVeigh, that had a fanciful scenario of an attack on the FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C., wherein a gigantic bomb just blows the whole building to kingdom come, written by a white supremacist, and it has made its way through the internet into the hands of an awful lot of militia organizations and other people who are not responsible people at all. So I do know that there are those who would attack you merely because you're American. You know how many of those organizations there are? Well, Black September, Hamas, Bin Laden, so many of them in the Middle East would love to walk into this room right now with an AK-47 blazing and kill as many of us as they could. Only because we are the great Satan, so they say in Iran, who helps to sponsor Israel. They believe, like the various conspiracy theorists, that the Jews are already ruling the world and they run everything, and so they want to kill Jews. This young man who dragged that unfortunate black to death down in Texas said that he hoped that that event would trigger the killing of blacks and Jews in America. I thank God that over all of the years of my ministry, and over all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles and dozens of booklets and the many books that I've written, and the thousands and thousands, maybe 15, 20,000 radio and television broadcasts, and the thousands of sermon tapes, that in every single one of them, there's information to completely just divorce ourselves from and distance and separate ourselves from the last, 30, 40, 50 years, any groups who would espouse those hideous and violent acts. Over in the 21st chapter of the book of Luke, Jesus Christ of Nazareth talked about the times in which we live. He said, warning, what would be the signs of the end of the world, as some people characterize it. Well, if you look up the word, it means the end of the age. And merely is talking about the end of civilization as we know it. It's a transitional period. The world doesn't stop. It is not talking about the end of human life. It is talking about the collapse of human governments and the intervention of Almighty God. You can either believe that or not. It doesn't matter whether you believe it. Believing it doesn't make it happen, and not believing it doesn't make it go away. Our belief doesn't, disturb God or doesn't move God to do things more quickly. We are not that important in the scheme of things. And anyone who thinks to take the law into his own hands and try to precipitate something that is written in biblical prophecy has got to be crazy, completely, oblivious to what the Bible really requires of any person who believes in Christ, but certainly knows nothing about what Christ himself taught. He said, verse 9, "When you shall hear of wars and commotions, be not terrified." Quite a message there. Wars. How many wars have we been hearing about? Well, the United States has been involved in a whole bunch of them. And I mean all the way from World War II to the sudden attempt by Britain and with aiding and abetting by the United States to try to prevent the Soviets from getting an incursion into Greece, where we had to send tanks over there and stop that, to the Korean War, to the protracted Vietnam War, to Grenada, to Panama, to Kosovo, and before that Bosnia, and then of course to the Gulf War, and then to the second sending of an awful lot of troops over there. So you think of wars and rumors of wars, that it can cost billions of dollars to deploy at least 3 aircraft battle groups over there, and tens, twenties, fifties of thousands, if not several hundreds of thousands, of soldiers, sailors, and Marines, because Saddam Hussein is threatening Kuwait again. Commotions. What is a commotion? Well, mass murder, bombings of buildings, riots, sudden coup d'etat, overthrow of government, people taking to the streets. When you hear of wars and commotions, said Christ, be not terrified. What does that also say? It's not saying go precipitate a war, go cause a commotion. It's saying to pacifistic people, people who are merely looking out at the world, oh, there's a terrible riot, there's a terrible upset, there's an overthrow of government, there's a lot of things happening over here in East Timor. People killing one another. That's terrible. God talks about those that sigh and cry for the abominations that occur around them. But the ones that are Christ-centered are not the ones who are going to actually bring it to pass. These things must first come to pass, but the end that he was asked about is not by and by. Then he said unto them, "Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom." We're living in that time. How many trouble spots are there that could erupt into war, and you could wake up tomorrow morning, and I'm not kidding, it's not to frighten anybody, it doesn't have anything to do with you directly, but it may involve the United States and its military forces, and it may involve and drag us into a major war if it happens in some of these areas. For example, what do you think about what's going on between North and South Korea? Are you aware of the threats by China against Taiwan? Are you aware of Chinese military maneuvers into the Chinese silkworm missiles and their very advanced missiles, of which there are 18 of them that are aimed at American cities, which could reach any American city with the exception of the very southern tip of Florida? Are you aware of that? Well, it happens to be a fact. It's in place right now. Are you aware that the Chinese have been really outraged and bitterly angry at the United States ever since the bombing of the Chinese embassy in Kosovo? They believe it with all their heart to have been deliberate. I don't think it was deliberate. I think it was stupidity. I don't think it was deliberate, but they believe it's deliberate. It's caused a tremendous rift in Chinese-American relations. Do you know that the Chinese would have every legal reason if they take over, and by the way, the Wang Wanpoa, whatever it is, you'll get that in the article, organization which had controlled the ports in Hong Kong is the same organization which helped to implement the takeover of the Communist Chinese of Hong Kong and have direct ties to the Chinese People's Army, are no doubt going to be approached by the Chinese People's Army to position intermediate range ballistic missiles at both ends of the Panama Canal, which could reach the United States. We may be headed in the future years, 2, 3, 5 from now, whatever, for another missile standoff, this time not with just Russia and Cuba, but with the massive Chinese government where more than one quarter of the population of the world resides. That could happen right down here in the Panama Canal. You're aware of that, right? You're aware of the potential of a widening war in Kosovo, that it's not over over there. Now we've got genocide in reverse, as some of the ethnic Albanians are killing some of the Serbs, and it still is an ongoing problem. You know what could happen at any time in the Middle East? And it is really a powder keg. And I mean, when Judy sends me the information, just page after page, I left about half of this up in my room, but I've just got so much information here about Jerusalem, about the pipe bombs that went off just the other day. And there are going to be more of these, and it'll be heightened. There are going to be more going on between now and year 2000, because all these various organizations want to force America out of there. The Israelis, in trying to show goodwill, want to withdraw from southern Lebanon, and they want Syria to take over. But the Syrians are so strapped for manpower that they're not able to do so. And the reason they're strapped for manpower is that Hafez Assad is nearing the end of his life, and there's a tremendous go-around inside of Syria for succession. Who gets to take over as the dictator of Syria? Of course, the Israelis have even made certain gestures toward handing back the Golan Heights to satisfy Syria, so that Syria won't launch its missiles, and it is reaching a point where it is self-sufficient with regard to munitions and missiles. And Syria is a major power in the region. Now, even in spite of the Camp David Accords, the Egyptians are also reaching a very near parity with the IDF, and they have the largest and most effective navy in the Middle East, and they've got missiles, and they've got modern weapons from France and from Germany and from the United States. And recently, the defense minister has made a very angry statement against Israel, which has precipitated a lot of very nervous feeling inside of the Israeli government. And that's why Mubarak, you didn't hear about that in the major news, did you? Boycotted the recent kind of a cosmetic trip that our president made to Oslo, where he met Yasser Arafat. When Mrs. Arafat the other day was talking to our first lady, I don't know why I bite my tongue every time I want to say that, Mrs. Arafat opined as how there is a policy among the Jews of genocide, and that the Jewish population has been deliberately spreading biological germs and conducting biological warfare against the Palestinian population. Mrs. Clinton just sat there and listened. Then she went on, that is Yasser's wife, went on to say that they are also polluting and poisoning the water, and that they are killing Palestinians. And Mrs. Clinton didn't say anything against that either. And of course, she then promptly called once again for Jerusalem to be handed over to the Palestinian Authority and become the capital of Jerusalem. Then she turns around and says the exact opposite when she gets back among the American people, but the American embassy, you know, is still in Tel Aviv. It's not yet moved to Jerusalem. Only a delegate, like a consulate official, is in Jerusalem, but the embassy is not over there because the American government doesn't want to make it real clear to the Jewish government that it is 100% in favor of what they've said over and over and over again from the war, the Six-Day War of 1967, when they once again got their hands on the old city of Jerusalem and the Western Wall, that they will never give back one inch of Jerusalem, and that Jerusalem is the perennial, eternal capital of the nation of Israel. So here's the First Lady making noises about maybe the PA, the Palestinian Authority, ought to be able to have Jerusalem. Now, the FBI knows that anyone who believes in biblical prophecy knows that Jerusalem is the focal point of prophecy. The Sermon on the Mount was right there, not Sermon on the Mount, but the Olivet prophecy, on the Mount of Olives, across the brook Kidron, where you could see the skyline of the city of Jerusalem. When Jesus made these statements and was talking about all this great destruction that was going to occur, his disciples could simply look across his shoulder, and there was Jerusalem. He made these pronouncements, many of them in the temple. He made them right in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the place where he cleansed the temple. It was the place of his triumphal entry. It is the place where the Bible says he's going to come back. It is also the seat of the three great monotheistic religions of the world. It is the place of all of their literature, all of their beliefs. The Islamic adherents believe that Muhammad ascended to heaven from a rock that is inside the gilded dome of the rock. I have been inside of it twice and have seen the people going down into the cavern beneath that solid stone to pray. They make you take off your shoes and walk in there on little paper slippers. And you can go in as a visitor, even from the Western world. At least you could back during those days. Been there several times. And they believe Muhammad had ascended to heaven from there. Well, of course, to the Jews, they believe it was the site of David's palace and also the site of the Solomonic temple and the second or the Herodian temple, and that it will be the site of the third temple. And the Christians, of course, believe that Jesus Christ was crucified right there. And so the three great monotheistic religions all look upon Jerusalem as the holiest place in the world. And they have squabbled from immemorial times over the holy places and who should have access to them, who should control them. And so the FBI is very well aware from all the literature, and there is so much of it on the internet and so much of it out here in, as they say, the snail mail and the published type of literature from all of these church organizations. They're very well aware that people look upon Jerusalem as being catalytic to great world events. Well, it happens to be what the Bible says. I believe that as well. But it doesn't mean I'm going to try to precipitate it. I'm merely looking at it as a person who is viewing from afar these events, reading about it, getting it on television, getting it from the World Wide Web, which is a far better news source than your mainstream media could ever be, by the way, and getting it from other sources, because people from all over the world send me clippings and call me and write to me and tell me what's going on. And then I try to put out to other people via our website, Chris Cumming doing a magnificent job, and via my publications and sermons, what is my take on it, what I think is going to happen, and what should we be doing about it, if anything? Nation against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and great earthquakes shall be in diverse places. Well, they say there have always been earthquakes, but have they been so frequent? Have they been so devastating? Look at the poor Turkey people over there in Turkey today, the Turkish people. Well, they had another earthquake right near where they had that other devastating one where thousands died just yesterday. One after another, all around the world, and famines and pestilences. Now, I could talk for the next 4 hours on pestilences and on biological and chemical warfare, and not only on anthrax or smallpox, but on many, many other, now we know, chemical and biological programs that are underway where people can actually introduce stem rust, root rot, and different types of diseases that afflict crops, and can do so by spraying it in the air and can just wipe out the farmers and the economy of a nation by doing so. And that also is very current information from over the World Wide Web. Fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven. Just recently, our Pentagon was just absolutely beside themselves, very, very nervous, because there are some private entrepreneurs who are going to launch a spy satellite. And they actually launched the satellite. And it's going to take the same kind of pictures that the SATCOMs do, which can apparently read the label of a cigarette package from 22,000 feet. That's true. They're in a geo-orbit, that is, they're in a stationary orbit all around the world where our CIA can keep track of enemy troop movements and military bases and all that type of thing. This outfit, I think, was launched from California. The CIA breathed a huge sigh of relief because, you see, what they were planning to do was to focus it in on Kosovo or wherever they wanted to and sell the pictures they took to the highest bidder. True American entrepreneurship. Just private enterprise. Well, their missile fell down and splashed in the, you know, in the Pacific and did not get into orbit the way it was supposed to. But by now, I think they've already got another one up there. And they're planning on launching several. Not to be outdone, other countries are also entering into that now, and you're going to see countries all over the world with private enterprise, not the government, not the CIA, not the military, launching spy satellites and selling the photographs they take to the highest bidder. That has got our CIA and the Pentagon extremely nervous. It makes me wonder, since the articles have gone on to say, we are now entering a time where the American military is having to look at the possibility of war in space. That is, to have positioned in space lasers, positioned in space space platforms, like the MIRV, some of the others that are up there, the Mir, to actually have rockets with nuclear weapons in them. Now you get into this nightmarish scenario where if this takes place, no one will even know who the enemy is. Because all of the great industrialized nations, the developed nations, will eventually, even including Japan and Germany and China and all the rest of them, India, Pakistan, Britain, United States, name them, one after another, will have these satellites up there. And so the idea is, well, if we see some enemy, some potential enemy, putting such a satellite in orbit, we're going to have to try to shoot the satellite down. Now that makes me wonder about what it says in the Word of God, that you're going to see fearful sights in the heavens. I have always taken that to mean like a meteoritic shower, or like more incidents of comets going by, or like the moon turning blood red, or like the sun being darkened, which the Bible says eventually in the heavenly signs that will happen just before the intervention of God. You read of that in the 7th chapter of the book of Revelation, that that was all divine fiat, that it was caused of God. But now I'm beginning to wonder if satellites and explosions 22,000 miles up there, and rosy pink sunsets, and fiery things looking like comets hurtling down to splash on the land or in the ocean, are not also a part of the scenario that biblical prophecy paints or portrays for us. It goes on to say, before all these they shall lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the churches and into prisons. Now a prison is political or state-run usually, and a church or a synagogue is a religious organization, so it's both, being brought, not invited, not the red carpet treatment, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony. Settle it therefore in your hearts not to meditate before what you shall answer, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. This is not to make anybody paranoid, but it reminds me of a skibby shirt or a t-shirt that somebody had. It said, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not really out to get you. And that's true when you think about it. But it's not to make anybody paranoid. That wasn't what Christ was trying to do. He was merely trying to warn his people that it's not going to be all rosy and easy sledding, that there are going to be troubles. What did they do to Christ himself? You shall be betrayed both by parents and brethren and kinsfolk and friends, and some of you, shall they cause to be put to death. Well, that did occur back then, didn't it? Look at Stephen, who was stoned to death. Look at James, the brother of John, who was beheaded. Look at Christ himself, who was a martyr. Look at the Apostle Paul, who was apparently thrown to lions in Rome's great pavilion there in front of Nero himself. And they say that Peter was crucified upside down. You shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, because you believe in what Christ teaches. But there shall not an hair of your head perish. Talking about eternally or eventually, spiritually, but also saying some would be chosen to be martyrs. The bulk of them were not. Only a few outstanding people in the first century were martyred for the sake of Christ, but the bulk of the people were not. In your patience possess you your lives or your souls. Now verse 20, when you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. All right, what scenario? First, let me go back and say that in 71 A.D., that actually took place. The high priest heard an audible voice, according to Josephus, that told him to tell everybody to flee. Those who listened to it and fled to Pella were spared and saved their lives. Those who did not, in their hundreds of thousands, were slaughtered in the most inhuman way you can imagine, impaled, set afire, and murdered. Hundreds of thousands of them by the sack of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple under the armies of Titus. These were merely precursors or forerunners of what the Bible says is to happen during our day. When you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know the destruction thereof is nigh. Then let them which are in Birmingham, Alabama, know. Quilcene, Washington, know. Pasadena, California, know. Tyler, Texas, know. Let them which are in Judea flee into the mountains. Where are the mountains from Judea? All points at a compass. It is a mountainous region. Jerusalem is high in the mountains. Does it say north, east, west, or south? No. What if you're in Tasmania, one of the most beautiful places in the world? It would be about the latitude of maybe northern Washington or southern British Columbia. Beautiful conifers and a pretty rainy climate and so on. You're supposed to go from there, from Tasmania, across the Indian Ocean, up through the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aqaba, up to the nation of Jordan, which is probably going to be locked in war by that time, or at least going to be affected by the war that will be taking place in the Middle East, and try to get yourself to a cave in Petra? None of that makes any sense. It says, make those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and them which are in the midst of it depart out. And let not them that are in the countries, America, Britain, Australia, enter therein too. Don't go over there to that part of the world. Unfortunately, brethren, there are people who are attending some, I don't know how many, I know two, I believe for sure, but there's more than 100 splinter groups now that came out of the old worldwide organization. So I have no knowledge of what all of them think or believe. There are many little independent groups. But there are at least two of the main ones who are still preaching the theory of going to a place of safety, who think they're going to go to Petra, for pity's sake. And that fanciful notion is absolutely wrong. It is just not right at all. It's not going to happen. I just hope that when it doesn't happen, the great disappointment won't cause them to do something that is, you know, contrary to God's will, that they won't lose their salvation, or they won't get so embittered that they will do something that is wrong in God's sight. Back in the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, I'm going to have to talk over the kids screaming and the people talking in the next room, and I'm sorry, I'll talk as loud as I can so you can hear it. But sometimes you're in competition with other people who rent other rooms. In the 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, you know, beginning in verse 14, it says, "This good news," and I'll put it in the way it should be in modern English, "of the kingdom shall be preached, proclaimed, published," as it says in the book of Mark, "in all the world for a witness," and it's a witness against them, "unto all nations, and then shall the end come. When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet," all you got to do is go back and read what Daniel said. Then you might want to get Kiddo's Biblical Cyclopedia. You might want to get some of the Bible dictionaries. You might want to get some of the biblical commentaries like Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, or maybe Ramsey's or some of the other. And then look into Rawlinson's Five Great Empires and find out what they say about Antiochus Epiphanes and about, in fact, about six different occasions when the Holy of Holies was desecrated and when Jerusalem had something which is an abomination in God's sight put in the place of the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy of Holies in the temple that was dedicated to God by Solomon. And later on, of course, the temple that was there during the Herodian period. He's talking about the end time. "When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place." Now, Matthew was not written until about 51 or 2 A.D. At about the same time, incidentally, that 1st and 2nd Thessalonians were written. The very first literature to ever be written was not, you know, in the order that you read it in the New Testament, but actually differently in chronology. And so Matthew was written at about 51 or 2 A.D. At the time that it was written, the temple still stood. But these words were recalled, having been orally spoken by Jesus Christ, by the scribe Matthew, who wrote them very faithfully, and God's Holy Spirit made sure that the words were put down exactly as they were spoken. So the statement in 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter, which coincides exactly with the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. It's very important. I'll turn to that and read it right quickly. Most of you in this audience are very familiar with that. 2 Thessalonians, the second chapter. Paul was beseeching the people in Thessalonica that they weren't disturbed or upset. Don't go running off somewhere, give up your faith, or be shaken or troubled in mind, that the second day, or the coming of the second of Christ, Christ's second coming, is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means, verse 3, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first. Haven't you wondered from time to time about what happened after my dad died? Haven't you wondered from time to time about the vast ecumenical meetings that have been taking place? What about this gigantic interfaith, interreligious meeting that took place only days ago in the Vatican, where the heads of the greatest Islamic organizations, where the head of the Orthodox religions from Greek Orthodoxy, where the Archbishop of Canterbury or his top delegate, where everybody except the Dalai Lama, because the Chinese would have resented it, was there in Italy, went to Assisi to pray, went back to the Vatican and heard an address by the Pope. All of them agreeing that the religions need to get together to try to bring world peace. If you saw the television program I did on that, one of the communiques that came out on that said that they could even parachute one of these world leaders into a trouble spot. Can you imagine a Pope coming down in a parachute in Kosovo saying, hold it, quit shooting at one another. Skirts flying, hat falls off, hair flying all over, and the Pope lands, grunts, oh, I think I broke my ankle. Pick him up, dust him off, and he goes around, quit fighting. I mean, it just made a ludicrous scene in my mind when they said that. But they actually said that they would parachute one of these great, respected world leaders into a trouble spot and try to bring peace instead of starting wars. Well, they wouldn't know who he was. They'd start shooting at him before he even got down. But there are an awful lot of great, big meetings taking place. You know, it's funny. You stop to think about this, that in the world, the movement today is to coalesce. It is to unite. It is to come together. United States of Europe. Reunified Germany, all the religions getting together, NATO expanding into a larger pact, and now someone is propounding that they ought to have a Central and South American Atlantic conference. And if you can have a NATO North Atlantic, why can't you have a South Atlantic treaty organization? All of them could have a mutual pact to come to everybody else's defense if they're attacked by some outside enemy. So the movement in the world is just like in the days of ancient Babylon, is to coalesce, come together, to unite, and to have one world government. At the same time that in God's church, the movement has been, over the last several years, in which direction? Fragment, explode, go in every direction of the compass, run off, grab a little boat, jump off the ship, and paddle your canoe in some direction. Follow me, I'll be your leader. You know, there's so many people that just desperately want at least 3, 5, 7, or 9 people to listen to them. And that's happening all over the United States. They're out there just boring them half to death. But they got people sitting there listening to them. There was a guy that actually held a group together for several years after he fell away from the worldwide church that had people believing that the demons were coming into the United States on banana boats up the Mississippi River, for pity's sake. And I guess they had to just spray the Dole bananas to make sure the demon didn't get off. And people just sit there, oh, I believe that. How many of you were in Birmingham when Richard Rice was the pastor here? Any old hands go back that far? That's interesting. I knew Richard when he was a young college student, and my wife and I went camping with Richard and his intended when they were young students, and always thought very highly of that man. I think the people in the church that he served at that time thought very highly of him. Most of you don't know what I'm talking about, but there was a young man that I remember from Ambassador College who was over a fairly large church here in Birmingham, I think of several hundred members. I forget how many, maybe Mr. Lamb knows, back during that day. I have written and talked about this so often, I won't belabor it, but there is identified in the 17th chapter of Revelation a great false woman who is obviously an harlot and called the mother of harlots, an abomination of the earth, who sits astride a city that is famous for its seven hills, who is over a great, vast, worldwide, global, whatever you want to say, universal, intercontinental, international church, every time you want to say something, it means, you know, worldwide, you're just hamstrung to what word do I use without naming some group? You know, I don't want to do that, but is over a universal church. And the Bible very clearly says that this person is going to have fantastic power, that Satan, the devil himself, gives him and will have the power to call down fire. Notice in verse 3, let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except they're coming falling away first. Do you ever speculate maybe that is already happening or has happened, that we're right at that time? And that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. The title that some people put on these men is blasphemous beyond belief. I won't even say the words together. I won't even hyphenate it. But they take the word holy, and then they take the word Father, and they put those together and kiss his feet. And he's just a man. And every morning, if he's regular, like most people ought to be, he does the same thing you and I do. And it's got to be disposed of in exactly the same way. And I'm sorry to say that. I don't want to shock anybody. I could say he puts his pants on the same way I do, but he doesn't. He wears a dress. And I couldn't say that, though. But I happen to think that that may be the fulfillment of this prophecy. It doesn't mean I can bring it, you know, to pass or to come to pass, but I think that may be happening. Who opposes? Who do you think? Let me just interrupt myself. Who is the most revered, loved, and respected human being on the face of this earth today among all nations? I think it's the Pope. I think absolutely in every nation of the earth that he is the most revered, honored, respected person. There are more millions of people who would love to just get a picture of, oh, he's putting out a plastic credit card with his picture on it, and it will not only have the numbers, I don't have to wait and look and see what numbers it has on it, but it not only will have all these numbers on it, a little stripe of tape, but it's going to be blessed by the Pope. They'll probably take great big cartons of tens of thousands of these cards, and he'll go like that, and that means zop, you know, and you get it, and it kind of glows, and oh, man, it was blessed by the Pope. You put that in the machine will probably go, you know, just all around, come up three plums or something, and start giving you money. But they're going to, the papacy is going to now issue a papal credit card, and I find that fascinating, fascinating. Who knows what else will come out eventually? We've heard about the chips. Not just because I know that the mark of the beast is not a computer chip forcibly put under the skin of an 80-year-old struggling lady, doesn't mean that the thought of implanting computer chips under the skin of someone's hand or in his forehead isn't being thought about by certain agencies, because it is. They're already doing it to their dogs. Keep track of their dog. They got a little signal and a GPS. Where's Fido? Oh, he's up the neighbor's tree. There he is over there. And they can find him by a beeper that will lead them right to Fido. And they're putting him beneath the collar, you know, in the skin of the dog. He opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Now, I have tried to cover all the bases and to protect myself from making a dogmatic statement by saying maybe in the future there could be a pavilion, there could be a cornerstone, there could be some dedicated monument. It wouldn't have to be a completed temple. But that's just Garner Ted's personal opinion. I don't know that that's right. I do know that when this was written, the temple stood there. And so the only meaning that Paul could have implied here, and the only meaning that we could have read by Matthew in Matthew 24:15, is that the holy place was inside that temple. Now, you know, I've tried to keep you abreast of Gershon Salomon, who has no connection with the Christian religion at all. He is a Jewish Judaism adherent, and he and his group of Temple Mount faithful want to destroy the Al-Aqsa and the Dome of the Rock mosques and erect in its place the third temple. Just the other day, the Palestinian Authority, in two of their newspapers, hyped their populaces by claiming that they had information to show that the Israelis are plotting to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque. This got those Arabs running around in circles in a frenzy. They're expecting now more acts of terrorism because some person has built up this non-existent straw man. It's a complete lie. no official Israeli government, not the army, not the government, not anybody, but certainly Gershon Salomon and his organization and some other organizations, among them some Christian so-called organizations, want to see a temple built in Jerusalem and are willing to dynamite those mosques to try to precipitate some violent reaction by the Arabs, and if they do that, they sure will get that job done, to precipitate a gigantic war in the Middle East, which will then precipitate a return to religion by the Jewish populace, which will in turn precipitate the building of a temple and the dedication of it. Could that happen in the next year, two, or three? Sure it could. You know it could. Now, if that does happen, which nations would have the most to gain in world public opinion? To rescue the remaining Jewish population following a massive chemical, biological, and maybe nuclear attack from Arab countries, all of whom have the missiles, and all of whom have the stockpiled weapons to do it, attack against Israel, where tens and hundreds of thousands of Jews, if you can imagine it, are gassed to death or killed by biological or chemical agents. Which nations would come to their aid? By the way, how long, do a lot of you remember way back 20, 30 years ago when I was saying eventually Germans will be found, German troops will be injected into trouble spots all around the world, that Japan will begin to inject its troops in trouble spots all around the world, that both the German and the Japanese post-World War II constitutions will either be reinterpreted or rewritten to allow them to have offensive rather than purely defensive military forces? Do you know that there are Germans walking around with tanks painted with the Iron Cross on them in East Timor today? Do you know that there are German increments under the aegis of the UN that are in Kosovo and in Bosnia today? That already the Germans are beginning to supply troops to trouble spots around the world? Do you also know that there is quite a movement to have an all-European army outside of UN control? And this is on the part of major nations inside of Europe, especially Germany, and it's ongoing. They're starting to think about that. So my question to you is, would the United States be involved almost instantly if there was a massive attack by one or two combined Arabs against the nation of Israel? Well, you know it would. What's that got to do with the fact we might be Manasseh? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Except that I knew, as my dad did before me, to whom these prophecies pertained back in books such as Ezekiel and Daniel and Isaiah and Jeremiah. And none of the other people did. You know and I know that for literally decades, 30 and 40 years, all the mainstream fundamentalist Protestant evangelicals on television and radio were saying Russia is the beast. Russia is going to attack Palestine. Russia was the big threat to world security and peace. And finally, when the Soviet Union imploded, they still didn't want to let go of it. I don't know what the likes of Hal Lindsey is saying today. I don't keep abreast of what he says. But he said it, and so did everybody else. But my dad and I were saying, no, no, Europe is where the beast power always was. And the prophesied resurrections, one after another, of the end-time beast power that is going to emerge right where the Holy Roman Empire was, is going to be in Central and Eastern Europe. And at all times, in all cases, the Holy Roman Empire was an Islamic organization, wasn't it? Absolutely not. I'm trying to catch you. I want you to think. Never was it Islamic. Do you know when Islam came along? Anybody? Volunteer? 600 years this side of Christ. 600 years this side of Christ. 300 years this side of the Council of Nicaea. Way this side of the emergence of the apostate church. Finally, a man named Muhammad started robbing caravans, and tell you all the rest of the story by just reading about his life. And the religion of Islam came along. Well, at all times, I even had a man who used to be a minister in the former organization who was espousing that and teaching that out of the pulpit, that Saddam Hussein is the beast. Now, some of these organizations that the FBI is warning against say that the United States government is the beast. They don't know what they're talking about. The beast was around for all of its resurrections and its collapses from the days of Charlemagne until the collapse of Hitler's Third Reich. And there is to come a final end-time resurrection out of the ashes of defeat, which is already well underway. And it will be dominated by the great false woman who mounts and rides the beast, which is a symbol of complete coalescence between the two and the domination of religion over the state, and it will be state worship. And this prophecy in 2 Thessalonians very clearly says that there will be someone ensconced inside the temple of God claiming that he is God. Verse 8, it says, that wicked shall be revealed, whom the Lord shall destroy or consume with the spirit of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So what's the time setting? The time setting is at the time just before the second coming of Christ. And if you read the 19th chapter of Revelation, the first act that Christ performs following standing on the Mount of Olives is to grab hold of the beast and the false prophet, who is the Antichrist, and to drag them kicking and screaming to a precipice and cast them over into Gehenna fire, where they die. They are destroyed. What is the time element of this false prophet sitting in the temple of God? At the last moment before Christ comes, a usurper who is a pseudo-Christ, a false Christ, but yet is anti-Christ, claiming to be God, has deceived the whole world. Many great religions and faiths have flocked to him because it appears that not only now do statues sweat and bleed, and not only do people claim that an apparition appeared to them at night, but now he can perform it right before your startled eyes on global television. Just like a nouveau Pentecost, fire will descend out of heaven around him. Maybe a fiery corona will dance over his head. It says he will have the power to call down fire from heaven and to send great, strong delusion to these people. They're going to believe it. Now, wouldn't it be something if in the midst of this gigantic war that is going to take place in the Middle East, when do you think it could start? I know from past experience it could have started 10 minutes ago. But I'm not trying to frighten anybody. I'm just saying you don't know when it can start. And I don't know when it can start. I don't know what would precipitate, I hope 2000 doesn't, a gigantic battle in the Middle East in which Syria and Egypt and Saudi Arabia and all of them join forces and launch missiles against Israel. I don't want to see all those Jewish people killed, all those babies and elderly ladies and people just destroyed and killed in agony. But it's going to happen. Bible prophecy says it's going to happen. Then what happens? Well, the major nations immediately are involved. That's why, if you will turn to the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, it very clearly says that this great power, which is really a continuation of the beast power, is going to move into the Middle East and invade that area, and the countries to the east of the Jordan River are going to be exempted, but both Egypt and Israel are going to be occupied, and they will go all the way, apparently, even to Saudi Arabia, because it says they go as far as Put and Kush, which would be Pakistan and India, I firmly believe. Beginning in verse 40, only five long verses in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel. At the time of the end shall the king of the south, whoever that is to be, I don't know if it's Mubarak or a living man or someone in Saudi Arabia, push at him. Is that an oil embargo? Is it military action? Is it an attack against Israel, which is looked upon as pushing against the beast power? I don't know. But politically, militarily, it's more of a shoving match than it is an armed attack. And it precipitates the king of the north immediately like a whirlwind. And who was it who invented what was called whirlwind or blitzkrieg war, rapid war, the rapid deployment of troops? With chariots and horsemen, you can read tanks and ships and aircraft, and many ships, he shall enter into the countries, plural, and shall overflow and pass over. National borders do not stop him. He shall enter also into the glorious land, that's Palestine, and many countries shall be overthrown. Many countries. Does that mean Turkey, Lebanon, Jordan, Israel, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, some of the Persian Gulf sheikdoms, the UAR, Qatar, Bahrain? Does it mean all of those? Does it mean Yemen? I don't know. It may include all of those. It exempts only these. These shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. That may mean that Turkey escapes and that Iraq escapes and that Jordan escapes. It could mean those people. And shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. It says that Cush and Put, not Libya and Ethiopia, in verse 43, shall be at his steps or at his farthest borders, the limit of his advance. But tidings out of the east and out of the north. And what is that? Russia and China. And we know that China is becoming more and more a gigantic military power, a nuclear power, a power armed with missiles, and that is a very, very frightening power in the eyes of our Pentagon and our government. Tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. So here is this power coming from somewhere. Does he come from the north and the east of Palestine? No, look at the Bible. It can't come from there. Is there some power in Africa that you know of? How about Dahomey? How about Chad? How about Niger? How about Rwanda? You think they're coming from the black African nations? Let's use our heads. The only place that this power could come from, close enough to get involved in immediately launching an occupying force into the Middle East, is not over here in America, but in Europe. It's not the East and the North are the people who get angry because he has occupied that area, and now they're about to retaliate by an attack. So the intelligence, spy satellites and all the rest of it tell him, they're mobilizing. Here they come. And it says he goes away with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And the battle of Armageddon is shaping up. Now, who would have the most to gain politically, militarily, by saving Jews alive from being poisoned and gassed to death but Germany? Did you know that former Chancellor Kohl was over in Germany just the other day and was really calling for a greater understanding between Jews and Germans and talking about Germans getting over their history, but the younger generation learning for it from it, and was calling a halt to neo-Nazism and to ultra-right-wing organizations because the Jews were very irritated about elections in Austria, where about 25% of the vote had gone toward a neo-Nazi party, a leaning toward ultra-fascism or rightism in Austria. And the Jewish government was very upset about that. This is very recent news, by the way. To me, everything that I've always expected it was going to occur, a great false prophet saying, it's time now to solve world troubles and to bring world peace. And I see the first steps taking place under the aegis of the UN, a giant interreligious, interfaith organization. Under the aegis of the Pope, a giant interfaith, interreligious meeting in the Vatican. The Archbishop of Canterbury, the greatest imam of all the Islamic religions. People like the Dalai Lama, for pity's sake. All of them getting together. And the idea being that the Mother Church must return to the place of its birth. We will move the Vatican to Palestine. I need to go into that temple the Jews have built, which precipitated this whole war. And if I am there, they will not dare attack me. Isn't that right? Wouldn't that make sense? Do you think that any government on the earth would then risk an all-out nuclear war between a gigantic power, a United States of Europe, 300 million people, all the way from the borders of Russia to France, many, many nations, the Bible says 10, but there may be 10 major ethnic groups or 10 kings, literally, or 10 premiers or prime ministers, I don't know. I don't think Britain will be a part of them. And by the way, everything I'm seeing in the news about the euro, about British reluctance to enter into the full association and cooperation with the United States of Europe, looks like the British are dragging their feet, like they might not be a part of a united Europe. Everything that I've thought was going to happen over all these decades is beginning to take place now. Just when the church is fragmented and split in every direction, the things that we thought were going to take place in 1959 and 62 and 3 are happening now. And it's happening exactly as we always thought it would. And most of God's people are sound asleep. They're looking upon their own thing, have their little ideas, their little, you know, cells, their little private little family gatherings here and there. They got a lot of egotistic leaders that want to follow in to go out somewhere after them, but they don't want to do the work of God. Well, I'm telling you, I think we're living in a time of the fulfillment of a lot of dramatic prophecies. And as I told you at the beginning, I just counted it out there in my room before I came down here. The clock is ticking away. I don't think that there's going to be anything of any prophetic significance at all, except what human beings, through stupidity and through all kinds of weird ideas like white supremacy, or trying to precipitate Armageddon by bombing institutions and big buildings and churches and synagogues and things of that nature are going to do. But I'll tell you, I'm going to be wide awake at midnight. I'm going to be glued to my television, and I'm going to have a battery-powered radio there. And I'm not sandbagged down. I don't have enough food to last for maybe a very few, we might survive a couple, 3 weeks, I imagine. There's a lake down where I live, so I know we could boil water. I do have a backyard grill. I have three little butane or propane tanks, and I'm going to have all those filled. Not that I'm paranoid, but just in case. But I'm not going to be sandbagged down. I don't own an AK-47. I know it wouldn't be much use against an anti-tank cannon or Janet Reno riding behind the flamethrower. So I'm not going to be down there with an AK-47 trying to fight off Janet if she shows up at my front door. But I imagine you're planning on being awake at midnight on December 31st too, aren't you? I think the whole world's going to be awake. I don't think anybody's going to sleep through that event. Do you? I really don't. But I think it will be kind of funny if all the people are out cavorting around and popping champagne, getting drunk and saying, yay, the beginning of the millennium, which it isn't. They're a year off, and even then it's not the right year because the calendar is all fouled up. But I think it would be hilarious if right in Times Square with all the brilliant billboards and all the lights went out. Everybody running around in the dark. You got a flashlight? Can't find my car. Airplanes are not going to fall out of the sky, because airplanes are not run by little computer chips, but all kinds of backup redundant systems. I have a theory about, we'll find out what happened. I think that something happened in the cockpit. I think there was some violence in the cockpit. I think someone either intervened with a knife, or I think one of those guys, because there were 30 Egyptian high-ranking officers, and two of them were generals. You didn't hear that in the mainstream media. Judy sent it to me. Bless her heart. She does a great deal of work for God's church. And I found out via the internet. And those kinds of news sources are not available to the general public. They just don't hear about them. So we'll find out if they get the cockpit recorder, and then if they'll tell us what it says. See, I'm not sure they told us what those other ones said, and I'm not sure we ever got the real truth about what happened to Pan Am 800, because about 110 people saw some kind of a light streaking up toward the airplane. The government said, no, it was a central fuel tank exploded. Well, it probably did if a missile hit it. But sometimes you wonder if you're getting the whole story from the government. Well, I'm going to have to shut up because I'm going too long, and my voice is going to wear out trying to compete with all the sounds around here. I'm glad that our walls aren't that thin most places where we meet. But I would like to urge all of you who haven't been on the mailing list so far, let me send you this current newspaper if you don't ever get anything else, and let me send you my next issue of the 21st Century Watch newsletter. It's going to be really packed with a lot of this kind of information, a lot of things that are coming around. I mean, it's really a kind of a frantic time right now. And as we go toward countdown, December 31st, I'm going to try to get letters out and get at least one newsletter, if not two, out between now and then, and of course do television on subjects just like this. Now, we're trying to start hosted fellowship groups wherever we possibly can all around the country. Each one of our area coordinators, you met Mr. Tom Carey, and his wife and family, his two precious little girls are with him. A lot of you know them anyway, you know the Careys, and a lot of our members from the New Orleans church are here. There are volunteers all around the country that are going to play videotaped sermons from Tyler, from me, or perhaps sometimes a sermon just like this will be sent out if I'm not in Tyler on that particular Sabbath like I'm not today. And if you would like to know where they are meeting, do you have a time and a place for that? Somebody written that down? Where they meet here 1 week from today? Where is it?
We meet at Quality Inn off of Oxmoor.
On what?
Off of Oxmoor, off of I-65, get off on Oxmoor and Quality Inn.
A Quality Inn off of I-65? At 2 o'clock. 1 week from today, at 2 o'clock, at the Economy Inn off I-65, there's going to be a meeting where you will actually play a tape. Quality in. Quality in. And it won't be a tape of this because I've already seen it, so be sure and get a different tape. Maybe one from last week in Tyler or something like that. We'd love to have any of you who are not normally able to attend to come by and visit with those folks. They'll probably have some refreshments, is that right? And love to meet you. And I'd love to hear that a substantial group is beginning to meet together. And all we're doing is watching. We're watching and we're communicating. We're watching and we're preaching. We're witnessing. We are warning. And of course, I could have preached any number of different kinds of sermons here today about the meaning of repentance, about the Sabbath, about the law that was enforced before Moses, about anything from archaeology to evolution, and 100 other subjects. But I think because we're so close, and I've been reading all of this, and this very important FBI Project Megiddo has gone to all law enforcement agencies all over the United States, I think it's just what is happening now. And to me, it shows so many things falling into place that I thought was going to take place in about 1960 or 61. And here we are almost 2000, and now these things are beginning to happen so fast it takes your breath away. I need to get back to Germany. I need to get back to the Middle East, although it's a little bit, makes your hair stand on and think about going over there. If you go over there in an American tour bus, you never know who's going to run up and throw a bomb at you. And you never know what's going to happen between now and Y2K in the streets of Jerusalem and Bethlehem. There are going to be something like 3 million people try to get into little old Bethlehem by the time all of this is over. You can't identify all those people. There are people from nations all over the world that are white professing Christians, as well as Arabs from all over the world who not necessarily are there for the right purpose. But they can't screen every last one of them, what's going on in their mind. Jerusalem is packed with people, and security is at an all-time high. They're going to have everybody who can carry a gun or a metal detector, I'll guarantee you, out there trying to stave off some kind of a violent attack against the tourists who are over there in Jerusalem. The last place in the world I would want to be when January 31st at midnight comes along is in the streets of Jerusalem or Bethlehem, I'll tell you that. I'm thankful I live out away from Tyler, and we had been invited to go out to Pasadena to visit my brother-in-law and sister-in-law by marriage, Molly and Dave Andian, but we're going to be at home near Tyler. We're not going to be out there because I'm not sure the planes are going to run very regularly for a week or two after that. I think all the problems, we're going to have a bump in the road. It'd be a bump, but in Eastern Europe and Asia and some of the other areas of the world, it could be very serious, and Y2K is not over just because January 2nd comes along. The effects of it are going to be with us for a long time. And if one government supposition that up to 25% of small business goes under in the United States, and you're looking at a gigantic economic blow, and it could mean a meltdown eventually in the next year and a half or two of the global stock markets and the global financial industries and the banks and all the rest of it. So just be aware, have your antenna cranked out, know what you should be looking for. We're not setting dates. We're looking at the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place where it ought not, and armies surrounding Jerusalem. That's the two major things Christ said to watch for. I think I've portrayed for you some of the scenarios that might lead toward the development or the fulfillment of those two prophecies. So watch, and then Christ said, pray always. Get on your knees. And if you ever worried about your spiritual condition, you better not let any more grass grow under your feet, because the time is awfully short. I think it's awfully short for God's church. I hope that no major global eruptions occur on January 21st, 48 days from January 1st, 48 days from now. But it doesn't mean they won't, just because I hope that they won't. Well, it's been good to be with you for this short period of time, brethren. I'm sorry for all of the distracting things which tended to distract me a little bit, and I couldn't quite keep my mind where it needed to be focused on for all the various things going around the way I wish I could have. But how many of you am I meeting for the very first time in person? Can I see your hands? Well, that's great. Thanks a lot. I'm glad to meet all of you. Shake your hand before you leave, hopefully. All right. Well, we'll have a closing hymn. Shall we bother with that or just not sing a cappella anymore? You want to sing a cappella?
We'll have a closing prayer.
Closing prayer, closing hymn, whatever. Talk to you in a minute.